afternoon.
Hello, it's Rob and Sean.
Hey, how are you?
Hey,
Rob, how are you?
Hey.
Great. So bring me up to date on Supernova and your great marketing efforts.
Well, today we spent some time on the phone with a couple of gentlemen. One of the guys is basically the gatekeeper to four guys, probably all of them worth 20 to 30, 40 million each.
All 20 plus, yeah.
All 20 plus million. We'd only ever done private with him before, private equity. So we talked a little bit about the private equity that we had done, why we hadn't shown him anything last year, and it always been a one product area that we'd worked with him in. And so we just said to him, you know, last year we didn't bring you a lot of deals. We didn't see a lot that made sense to us. We're pretty selective about what we show. Frankly, we found a lot more opportunities in the public markets. And that's really where we were most successful in generating some additional return sets. And they said, well, tell us a little bit about what you guys do there. We didn't really realize you did that. You're so expert in the alts. We kind of just figured that's what you do. So that little introduction led to a 40-minute conversation. And the long and the short of it was is at the end they said, well, you know, we're invested in a number of hotels right now. And so we don't have the liquidity that we'd like, but we'd like to learn more about this, because we think we're going to sell a number of hotels in the next year or so, and you guys are two of the hardest working, smartest guys we do business with. Now, bear in mind, there are other guys are at Goldman. A said, and we'd really like to explore ways that we can increase our relationship with you. You know, we know we haven't done that, but we'd sure like to, and they kind of apologized for the fact that we hadn't done that. And so I said to him, I said, listen, Paul, don't say another word about this. I said, we're very fortunate guys. We're blessed to have great clients like you, a prosperous and, you know, happy practice. And I'm always amazed by guys in our business that do business with somebody for 30 minutes and say, okay, there it is. Now you've seen what I can do. Give me all your money. I've always thought that I would want to see guys demonstrate over a period of some time, maybe 18 months like we have, their ability to make good decisions, make sure that they didn't peddle me every product that came down the pipe from the firm, that they were deep thinkers, that really what they said panned out to making me money and they made me some money, then I would probably start to talk to them more. I'm a big believer that if we earn your trust, we'll ultimately earn your business. And so that's how we look at the world. And he said, you know what, that's why we like you guys so much, because I can just feel that you guys do well enough and that you're prosperous enough that you don't need to peddle anybody anything. They said, if you could get us this information, we'd really like to know more and think about how we expand our relationship as the year goes on. I said, all right, great, we'll get it to you. Let me set expectations. This stuff has to go through compliance, so you're not going to hear from us for a couple days. Doesn't mean that we forgot you or we're not on top of it. It's just that compliance isn't the most reactive part of this organization, so we'll get it to you when we get it to you. And they said, all right, talk to you guys later. Thanks for your time.
Awesome. Bring me up to date on the benefits of Supernova and your team meetings. How is the communication going? Are you sticking with them? The five-star model, things like that.
Talk about the team meetings for you.
Yeah, we are doing team meetings twice a week. We're tweaking it a little bit from the – so we are including, I would say, the updates from the managers and in addition to kind of ongoing – items and setting goals, but we just, you know, we found that what works for us is kind of meeting two times a week, probably like a Monday and a Thursday, you know, and we rotate topics based on need. Calendar is a big deal for the team, so we do spend probably half of those meetings going over calendar and meeting prep and making sure everybody's on the same page, and then probably two of the meetings a month end up being what would probably be your kind of slipping my mind, what's the name of those meetings, the results meetings, where we really focus on results of the team, planning, the discretionary accounts, et cetera.
And then the, Rob, this is Sean, the 1242 calls, they've been going well also. We've implemented the 24-month calendar at the beginning of this year. So we went through Outlook in January and are now engaged in the annuity discussion for the next 2 months. And also, you know, it's been a very timely one from a performance standpoint. Clients are, you know, a little apprehensive just given the change in administration here. And the higher level and frequency of communication, I think, has really put clients more at ease and has helped us really navigate in what has been a tumultuous experience for probably 60% of our clients. But, you know, all in all, they're very receptive and have made the comments that these really do give them a higher level of comfort as we're helping them navigate through this environment.
Good. So what have you learned?
Just generally about the whole process? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're always trying to, I mean, feedback is how Supernova evolves over time. And so you've learned some things. You know, there's some, clearly if you're still doing it, there's benefits to you. If there's things you're not doing, they may not be effective or you may not be doing them right. So that's what I'm interested in, things you tweaked or changed, things you've learned from your calls. You know, we're having deeper relationships with our clients. We're getting more of their money. We're getting more referrals. It's something, you know, what's happening that's different that you learned that you were not expecting that maybe that I can benefit from as a coach?
Rob, this is Rob. What I would tell you is that what I've gained from Supernova is that I've always said that communication is the lifeblood of any relationship and that the quality of our relationships will be defined almost exclusively by the quality of our communication with those clients. However, I did not have a framework upon which I could translate that from a knowing to a doing. And this has given us a framework, you know, very candidly, a simple framework, a framework that's so simple that I think at first blush I thought, well, this can't really work because it's too simple and it's not as complicated as this Pareto and guerrilla marketing and all the other things I'd looked at. But it really has created this environment where the quality of the communication has gone up. So what I would tell you is here's what I learned. First, the quantity of the communication has to go up because our quantity was inconsistent and spotty across the book. It has now gone up almost universally across the book, I would say across 90% of the book. And now that the quantity went up, now the quality is really going off the charts. So this call today, absent 1242, this call that I told you probably doesn't get made. We don't have a new deal to show them. There's nothing really new to report. But, you know, this created an environment where we have to. And the other thing that I would take away from it is I would say there's still a half a dozen people that aren't in the 1242 model. So that tells me they got to go. We don't like them. We don't feel comfortable with them. We don't want to do business with them. We have some innate reason. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's right or if it's wrong. But at this point, I'm willing to just say it is what it is. They got to go. You know, and I see them as C clients, and maybe they're C clients because I've been a D or an FFA. But no matter how many times you tell me I got to call Judy Delos or whatever the hell her name is, I don't want to do it.
No, I mean, that's very telling. I mean, that's very important. I mean, we call that the cringe factor.
I see her name on a piece of paper and I cringe.
Yeah, that's the cringe factor. She belongs to somebody else. They're not going to cringe. They're going to like her, and that's much better for her.
Yeah, and I finally, in the last couple of weeks, got past beating myself up and saying, you have to grit your teeth and do it. This is, you know, like running a marathon. If it doesn't hurt and this, that, and the other thing. And today just drove it home for me. These two guys that we have on the phone could easily hand us $10 million, $20 million in the next year or two.
Oh, easy.
And we love talking to them.
And there's more behind those guys. Really.
Yeah, and, right. And so Paul Wasserman is super, super connected in New York and has told me that, although I don't know what he thinks a guy named Reich has in common with all of his Jewish friends, wants me to join his Jewish Republican thing, and his best friend is the big power broker casino guy out in Vegas. Not that I have any, you know, delusions that we're going to land him as a client, but those are the circles that he runs in, and he seems to be kind of a serial introducer and connector. So I can feel bad about myself and sit down and, you know, talk to myself and say, you suck, you got to call this woman, grit your teeth and do it. I say, okay, I'm absolutely positively going to call her in 10 days at 3 o'clock. And in about 8 days, I start thinking of all the reasons I can't do it. And so I thought, I'm just going to save myself the emotional and the mental stress and anguish and get her the service that she needs and just move her on down the road.
Yeah. No, that's right. It's very good. That's an important thing to learn. I mean, if you learn that, do you know how when you give her away, you're going to feel so good. It's worth it.
I feel like a guy who just got parole, the warden called. Your parole came through.
Just think about the people we do business with, and we don't have to anymore. I mean, it's just like, why? Wow, we got freedom. So you're
yeah.
kind of released from your bondage. It's exactly that. You don't have to anymore. You've been successful. Yeah, I can't tell you how number of people that still, out of fear, keep clients that are awful, that treat the team with no respect, and it's just terrible. So good. That's a really good lesson there. Okay, so that's important.
Now, I do want to say that this lesson doesn't apply to me because I see all the people around the table looking at me kind of funny right now. So you can't deep six me. It still says Reich Fitzpatrick.
Well, let me get to another topic that you were very happy with. I want to see if if it's still working, and that was the leadership transition where you turned over a lot to Sean and felt that that had really helped your productivity, Rob, and helped the team. Is that still working? Do you still have the same energy around that? Those thoughts, where are you on that?
I do. Sean and I had a really good conversation. It's been about a week or two now, because the thing that we did simultaneous to that is that the firm, the private bank, is really located on the fourth floor. We sit on the ninth floor. And there was this theory among senior management that if I was down there invisible, that somehow this reputation that I guess I had more than everybody of being aloof and being overbearing and too aggressive would start to dissipate, and I think that that did happen. They thought that, you know, money would just fall in our laps. That's not happening, but I think that was always an unrealistic expectation. And so Sean taking over more and more of the day-to-day operations of it was good, and the fact that I was down there, I think, gave him the freedom to do that and to not feel like, you know, he ever had to check in with me about what was going on or what was happening. But what happened is that there were two things that converged to create tension on my part, and we had a really good conversation about it, and I think we've come to a really good adjustment to that. One is that in an effort to make sure that I was only talking to the very top clients, the proportion of calls across the top 70, I would say, is 15 to 20, me and the rest, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
So I would knock these calls out really quickly. And if I didn't have a ton of business development things to do or this or that, then, you know, I was struggling a bit to really figure out exactly what it was I wanted to do. Also, because I was out of the loop so much, I was starting to feel more and more and more disassociated with the practice. So I think I let go of too many things too rapidly. I don't think I really had enough things to adequately fill my plate. I don't think that I had thought through the whole business development and had a good enough strategy around that. So I felt like I'd lost contact with the people who really helped me build the business in terms of the clients. I feel like I was away from the epicenter of all the action, which is up here on the ninth floor in Sean and I's office. And by the way, we've sat in the same office for 15, 20 years now. And so I felt like I was in a bit of isolation. And I also felt like I had a difficult time separating leadership from day-to-day management. And what I mean by that is that there are some challenges and things that we face within the practice that I think need to be addressed, and I think we've got to really sit down and have some really super candid conversations and really talk about, you know, how do we make sure that we're all pulling in the right direction? How do we make sure we've got the right people in the right seats? How do we make sure all the right things are getting done and all of those things? And I think that I should still be engaged in those conversations, but frankly, those are going to be challenging conversations. So I felt like I was way too comfortable saying, ha, I guess this is your problem now, Sean. It sucks to be you, and walked away. And I had a lot of guilt around that. So I said to Sean, I know Rob uses the phrase leadership, and it is leadership, but at kind of the chairman level, I think that I still have a leadership role. And I think I was having a difficult time saying, how do I step out of the CEO office but not walk out the front door and still not occupy the chairman's office? And so Sean and I have talked about how to fix that. I think we're fixing it. The best news is that he and I have the kind of relationship that I can just say to him, I feel out of touch. I feel like I'm losing control. And he can say to me, well, you know, Robin, there is a little bit of an issue with some of our clients who are almost like, well, is Rob still alive? Is he still around? You know, maybe you should pop in on some of these calls. And so we're working our way, trying to feel our way through that.
Yeah, I mean, you can be in on the, you know, I'm not telling you your business, but some people do that where they, well, you're on the quarterly calls and Sean handles the rest.
And I think that's what we're trying to get to.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe we go to dinner with these people once or twice a year, and I'm always there for that.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I was not aware that you guys were on different floors. That seems a little bit less productive than it should be.
Very much.
Yeah, and it's brand new, and I think the fact that it coincided exactly with the restructuring that we were doing up here, I just felt like I was on an island isolated by myself. And you know, very frankly, Rob, I feel like we're more organized here. But the other thing is just emotionally and mentally, I thrive on energy.
Yeah, I know.
Being down there with a bunch of unambitious, empty suits doesn't do much for me.
So you're back on the ninth floor now?
Well, we still have the office on four, Rob. And then part of the conversation Rob and I had was that, you know, I'm going to, you know, show my face down on that floor too. And since I have more of the 1242 calls, me monopolizing, you know, a shared office, you know, during that time probably doesn't make that much sense either. So where the rest of the team can, you know, huddle and meet in here. So I'm going to go down, you know, we'll pop back and forth. It'll be more of an environment where we can have basically going to be a conference.
Yeah, what it really has become for us is it's basically our phone booth.
Yeah.
If I'm going to go spend 3 hours on the phone, I'm going to go down to the phone booth. Otherwise, I'm up here where all the power is and where all the energy is and where all the ideas are and where the money gets made.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Yeah, I would handle it that way. You know, you want to have a meeting down there with a client, that's fine. You want to be isolated, not be interrupted. I mean, sometimes that's wonderful to just go and get your calls made.
If I misbehave, that could be my timeout room. Go down there and think about what you've done, Rob. We'll call you when you come back up.
We'll call it the doghouse.
The doghouse, exactly. Now I've got a flop house and a doghouse.
All right, good. All right. All right, how about the niche marketing? I know you hired hired a coach for that, and how did that work? How come? Are you ecstatic? Are you happy? Where are you on that?
Still trying to articulate it and buy into it. It's Richard Wildman and his team, and Richard's super. Specific about exactly what he thinks a niche market has to look like. I'm not sure that I agree on every level with him. So, for example, and he raises an extraordinarily valid point, so I'll tell you both sides of the story, and then I think I know where the rubs are, but I'm not 100% sure. So when I wrote Richard the first email that I wrote him, I basically said, you know, look, we've won all these awards. We've been together for a while. We do a lot of production. we're clearly a talented team and we know what we're doing. From where I sit right now, Rob, the SMSAs, the four richest SMSAs, are within 10 miles of me in the United States now. We've passed Palo Alto in the Bay Area as the richest metropolitan area in the country. There are, within 40 miles of me, 400,000 millionaires. So there's this massively rich target market right here. So what Richard's attitude is that you have to identify ways to connect in those target markets there locally, and you have to be able to identify where these people meet on a regular basis. So where do they network? What associations do they belong to? And that could be either social, it could be professional, whatever it is. You have to figure out, you know, how do you tap into that network? How do you become connected to that network? And then his other big thing on it is that you've got to understand how they communicate on a regular basis within that network, and then figure out how do you get involved in that communication and meet those people. And I agree with all those things fundamentally. So initially, the target markets that I devised, one of them was C-suite executives. So my thoughts around C-suites are, is the chairman of the board of Martin Marietta Materials is a client of ours. The CEO of Cox Automotive, which is a private company, but was a public company that he sold to Cox Automotive until about 6 months ago, is a client of ours. The CFO of Kimberly-Clark is a client of ours. The chief human resource officer, who was formerly at Activision and just came out of retirement to take the same job with the Chicago Cubs, is a client of ours. And then at a lower level, we've got some CEO guys around here. So I said, gee, there's this great C-suite that we've got credibility in. We've got another client who's the CEO of an insurance company and a bank. Mm-hmm. And so we've got this great market that I think we need to figure out a way to turn that into a niche market. And Richard's attitude was, no, you can't do it because you can't tell me where they network, where they connect, where they recreate, or where they do any of those things. So that's not really a niche market. But yet it's a big part of my business. The other thing that's a big part of our business is top attorneys. So think of the top 10 to 15 lawyers in what are referred to as AMLA, American Law Review, AMLA 100 law firms. We've probably got 10 of these folks on our books. A less prosperous one makes $1.5 million a year. Our top guy makes $7 to $10 million a year. Law firms have unique situations, they have unique challenges, so on and so forth. But again, he went back and said, can you join the American Bar Association? Well, no, I can't. Can you join the D.C. Bar? Well, no, I can't. Can you tell me where these guys all congregate? Well, no, they really don't. Can you tell me what the common methodology of communication is? No, because they're all kind of siloed guys. They're all competitors. And so then he came back and said, well, that's not a niche market either. So my first three niche markets were C-suite guys, AMLA 100 guys, and then entrepreneurs. So we brought in $90 million 2 or 3 years ago from entrepreneurs that sold businesses. And again, he said that's too broad. So what he wanted to focus me down to is he wanted me to say, okay, people involved in the building trades in the Washington, D.C. area, you can use that as a niche market. And so I get that. I understand where he's at, and there's a lot of opportunity sets there. But then another one that I brought up that I was really interested in, and we're going back and forth about whether or not this is really a niche, is physicians who are employed or who are still solo practice, not solo, but are not hospital employees, in the 5 or 6 really profitable areas of medicine, which are generally plastic, orthopedic, gastroenterology, neuro, and I think that's pretty much them. But we've got a client that's a friend of Sean's. This guy's in his mid-30s. He makes, what, $1.5 million a year, $2 million a year?
Yeah, $1.4 last year.
He makes $1.4 a year in an orthopedic practice. But what I found as I did some research on him is that he makes about $500 as an orthopedic surgeon. He makes $900 because he's a partner in the ambulatory surgical area. So I started doing some research on the ambulatory surgical area, and these things are growing like weeds. And with all the compression in healthcare and all those things, I think they're going to continue to do this. A huge number of them, 30 or 40% of them, are physician-owned. And so I said, well, that's another niche. But again, because the headquarters for those associations are in Ohio or Illinois or somewhere, and all the orthopedic guys in that don't all belong to this ambulatorium thing. So I'm conflicted because the things I feel the most passionate about, Richard and his team seem to not want to allow me to designate as target markets. They don't fit into their neat thing. And I recognize Richard's a genius here, and I hired him because he knows more than I do. But I almost feel a little bit about, you know, if I go to church and I listen to the minister preach, I don't have to believe every single word that he says. I can have some room to have kind of my own philosophy or composition of what I've decided I believe over a lifetime of developing my belief systems. But that creates a little bit of conflict because you know Richard, and Richard basically says, look, it's this way or go pound sand.
I know Richard well. That's exactly right. Oh, that's funny. I know where he's coming from. Yeah, if you don't have a niche like he's talking about, he can't help you with next steps. And that's the biggest problem he has. What I would suggest is this. Think in terms of niche mastermind groups.
Okay.
People that serve the niches that you like, okay? You're comfortable in those niches. Then think about the people that serve them, because that's really what you want to do, right? You want to bring value to those people as a group. And you want to be referred into them by other people that are doing business with them.
Okay.
We get into the niche, and then we get referred inside the niche. That works great, too. You know, one CEO to another CEO. But the question becomes, like, for example, this ambulatory idea is brilliant, okay? It's a perfect niche. Now, the question becomes, who serves the ambulatory group? All right, if I'm a doctor and I want to start one of these, how do I do it? Who do I go to?
Okay.
Right. And that will be the people that you go to start it and maintain it are the people that potentially could be part of your niche. But don't think of those people as necessarily potential clients, but they are
right.
Great potential sources or introductions.
Yep. Perfect.
Right. And I'll give you perfect example, doctors that are not affiliated with hospitals. Well, that has been a hot area for a lot of years because those guys sometimes eventually want to sell their business to a hospital. And when that happens, that's a liquidity event like any other major
right.
sale business. And that's I may have told you that. The story of the guy that came to me and I said, have you sworn to mastermind group? He said, no, I went to a CPA and said, I want you in my mastermind group. And the guy said, no, I don't want to be, but you might want to join mine. And what we do is we have a group that designed to help doctors sell their practices. We have the gentleman that evaluates the business, the person that the CPA, the attorney that writes the papers, we have the realtor that sells the building, we have, and so forth. But we don't have a finance guy. Would you like to be it? And the average sales, $5 million plus. The guy said, yeah, I think I can probably find time for that. So he came back very excited. You could do that exact thing here.
Yeah, so let me tell you what I did today. We just bounced downstairs to grab a sandwich before we got on the call with you. And Gene Schoenfelter is an attorney who's in the same building as us, a different tower, who works for Miles and Stockbridge. He handled the closing for a client that we took on who later turned out to be a complete nut job nightmare and went through, of his $10 million he got, spin himself down to like $3 million in 18 months?
11.8 to 3.8 in 16 months.
So he went from 11.8 to, you know, 3.8 in 16 months and then was mad at us.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But so he fired us, but this guy's enough of a knucklehead that I'm sure that Gene knows that. And so what I said to Gene is, I said, Gene, I'd like to go together and have lunch with you, because Wells really struggles with, you know, how do they identify clients pre-sale? How do they help to provide a process or be part of the solution set to guys that want to sell businesses? And what I find constantly happens is that we go and talk to the bankers, and they say, yeah, let us keep that in mind. And then they come to us and say, hey, I found out that Rob Knapp's going to sell his business. Great. When's that going to happen? Next week.
Right. And no time to spare. Right.
Yeah. And so he kind of smiled. I said, what would you think about you and I sitting down and meeting with the bankers, find out who it is they're talking to and things, and see how you and I can start to put ourselves in the same traffic that our bankers are playing in and try to make ourselves resources to them and also bring them into some things to help them think about, you know, how do they get more successful here and get more traction here. And we really just go in there and act as, you know, friendly consultants to them. He says, Rob, I'd love to do that. Let's have lunch and talk about it.
Yeah, you got a little bit of an issue with confidentiality regarding the sale of businesses. That's the one
okay.
thing, because they always talk about you got to be on our side of the wall.
Gotcha.
So, you know, if you can, you know, sign a confidentiality letter, oftentimes you have to sign one for each case that you're involved in. If they'll let you do that, then otherwise you're an insider, and that's, you know, they don't want anybody else knowing about it until, that's the problem. They don't want it, you know, these guys are supposed to be making these plans, divesting themselves of assets, et cetera, putting them in trust, do all this work prior to the sale, but they, you know, they can't tell anybody that there's going to be a sale, so they have no time to prepare. So that's where you really can be a big help with the banker, but you've got to be in a very, you know, in a confidential situation. So my suggestion would be to meet with the banker first and talk about this and see if you can, if they will allow you on the other side of the wall, and then can we bring in an estate planning attorney and others that are vetted, that would also sign confidentiality agreements that we could use in a very calculated way, rather than being, you know, this stupid group that turns these, you know, waste billions of dollars in some cases because of poor planning.
Yeah, that's good. You know, and I know that there are a number of firms that Wells Fargo has kind of these very loosey-goosey, we'll do a dinner together, we'll do this together, we'll co-brand this, that, and the other thing. So there's got to be some mechanism to do that. But, you know, the other idea that you just gave me as you were going through that, one of our clients who I really like, and it's probably one of the smartest guys we have, is was the former CEO of Siemens North America. He rolled out of Siemens at 56, 57, some insanely young age, and now he's a partner in Madison Industries up in Chicago, not Madison Dearborn, the big PE firm, but Madison Industries. And his job is to help them vet companies that they're going to buy, then to buy those companies, negotiate the right fee, and then what they do is they say, instead of giving you the last dollar in terms of valuations, we're going to give you a little bit less, but we're going to give you a bigger back-end deal, and then we're going to give you the ability to work with somebody like George, who is really going to drive the valuations through the roof, so in the totality of the deal, you're going to get a much better deal, and that's what they want to do. So one time George told me about the three things that he looks at when he buys a company, and when somebody tells him he has a competitive, they have a competitive advantage, and one of the things really shocked me, and it just showed kind of the brilliance of a guy who spends his life in this field. He said, if somebody tells me they have a competitive advantage, the first thing I ask them for is their accounts receivables. And I kind of looked at him and said, well, why would you want to see their accounts receivables? He says, because if you have a competitive advantage, if you have a technological advantage, then you are absolutely critical to your customers. And they are absolutely going to pay you on time because they
right.
cannot afford not to have your services. So if you have ARs that are over 30 days, you're lying to me. You don't have a competitive advantage. You sell a commodity. So that's the kind of insights that this guy has. So one of the things I was thinking as you were saying that is, I could go to George and say, George, let me ask you a question. If you somehow you have an ability to spot companies that may be in play, that may be for sale, I don't know if somebody sources them for you or what, but you one time told me the three or four things that you look at. Can you articulate for me, if you wanted to meet people and be in a position to help them prior to the transaction, what would be the telltale signs? What would you look for? What would be the kinds of pre-planning strategies that even transactions or things they may be doing right here within the walls of Wells Fargo that would indicate, boy, that looks like the kind of stuff a guy who's getting ready to do a deal would do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great conversation. Business, you know, the guys that, you know, would be, that I would have in this kind of a mastermind group. In fact, there was this group that I met with in Indianapolis, because, you know, I knew a guy that wanted to sell a business, and I wanted to know who was, could help him. I met with the CPA, and he said, yeah, we have a group that does that. And I act as the CPA. We have a business broker. We have a lawyer. We actually have a couple consultants, too, that go in and help the guy get ready to sell the business. You know, help him with leadership and help him dress it up, kind of like getting your house ready to sell. Those are the people that know the business is going up for sale because they're actually brokering it. So, and in those cases, it's usually a private company. Maybe it goes for, you know, between 5 and 10 million. Those are wonderful cases. Great business, great guys. So, you know, you can form and be part of that group. And I suggest doing that. And then meeting with them once a month. Because what happens is, you know, Richard says, out of sight, out of business. If you meet with that mastermind group on business, on the sale of a business, they're going to say, you know, somebody came to me the other day and he's interested and I think you should talk to him. You know, he's not quite ready, but he's talking. Well, that means that he's 6 months away or a year away, but he's going to sell.
Right.
And if he got the right price, he would. And you can find buyers who, you know, you guys, outside of, you know, you're not going to get paid like you would if you had Wells Fargo do it, but you don't care if you get paid. All you want is the money, right?
So yeah, I'm the manager.
Right. So now you become a networker in the private business world, and that is great. It's great to do a public deal, no question. But like I said, you know, you got to get behind the wall, and most bankers aren't going to let you even close. So
right.
My suggestion is go where you're not going to get any compliance issues and get behind the wall, you know, with a business broker. And let's say you meet with them once a month and you only do one deal a year. Okay,
yep.
So what? You know, it's worth it. You've got the guy, you know, it's a $10 million account, and you've got a great network. Maybe some years you do four deals a year. But, it's a good relationship. They're good people, and I just think it's nobody's doing it.
So, Rob, let me ask you a question. As I think about those people, I would think CPA, attorney, business valuations, and business brokers. Am I missing anybody?
Well, the thing I found interesting is they were very interested in having a consultant on their team. And so they had a couple different consultants, just random consultants that come in and help the guy get ready to sell the business. That was the only one that I never thought about. But no, that's the essence of it. It's really, now, maybe a realtor. Commercial realtor is usually a good guy. They know, commercial realtors know what you want to know. They know who's coming in town, who's leaving town, who's selling, who's buying. And they know it ahead of time. I happened to hire a big commercial realtor to come in our business, and he knew everything about what was going on in the community.
Yeah, I would have never thought of that. That's a good check.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really important. So if you had him on there, you know, he'd know that the guy was getting ready to sell his business, space was going to be available, and he needed to lease it, you know, or and he knows a guy coming in town, and he needs some space, and they're both going to be, he can match them up, and guess what? He does great.
But
gotcha.
The right guys, you can have, some, you know, a group of guys that you'd like to be friends with, because think of it, this could be a 20-year relationship where you meet once a month. You're going to need to like those guys.
Right. All right, that's really good.
Go ahead.
What I hear you saying is that Richard thinks he's found the Holy Grail, but there isn't really a Holy Grail. He is absolutely right. There's 400,000 millionaires here locally. I ought to have a strategy to go get as many of those as I can. But I also should not ignore the connectivity that I have into these other businesses, because another business that I want to look at are precision machine shops. And one of our clients, who is the chairman of the board of Martin Marietta Materials, is buying these things up like crazy with his son. In some cases, he's turning them around and selling them. In other cases, he's just turning them around and milking the cash. And everything that I look at tells you that if you're going to see more, you know, automation in industry, if you're going to see some infrastructure rebuild and just all the things, these precision machine shops are going to continue to grow. That's an area that I can network in here locally and so on and so forth. But then I said to our client, I said, listen, I really think that this is an opportunity set. He said, oh, Rob, you're spot on. You're dead right. And I said, would you be willing the next time I'm in town to have lunch or dinner or drink with me and tell me how you would go about finding these guys, identifying these guys, and spotting them? He said, absolutely. I'd be glad to do that.
Oh, yeah. This is a gold mine. You got a buyer. I mean, think about it. You got an anxious buyer. And you got baby boomers, 1946 on, me, 70 years old, ready to sell, okay? You got this bulge of machine operators that don't have kids. They don't have kids anymore. And they, they don't have kids to inherit the business. They got to sell it. So, yeah, if you can, I mean, think about it. You got a business broker that's got four machine shop owners that want to sell, and you introduce them to your buyer, you're not going to make any money on it, but you're going to make some people really happy.
Yeah.
You make people happy. What happens when you make people happy?
They want to do more business with you.
They want to do a lot of business with you, and they want to refer you to their friends. How can I help you? Right? How can I help you? So that, you know, we talk about the giving board, right? What are we doing? If we can create an environment where everybody that we are intersecting with is winning, guess what happens to our business? It explodes. So that's the game. So when you get together in this group, you think about what can I do to help them? Not what can I get. What can I do to help them? What I get will take care of itself. I want to show them what I can do. I want to show them how I can be of value, but I'm there to help them. And people say to me, I don't want to meet with them monthly. I said, your job is to bring an introduction to that meeting every month. And if you do that, guess what else? They're going to feel guilty. They're going to want to bring somebody themselves.
Right.
There's never been a better time than right now for this explosion in opportunity. It's just exploding. So you can't do everything. But you and Sean, and, you know, you can both have these exactly the same kind of network, just with different people in different areas.
For example, I want to learn more from his buddy about the ambulatory and so on and so forth, but he's Sean's friend. Sean's known him since high school. So I need to let Sean tap into him, create his network there, and then I need to go replicate it somewhere else.
Right, and that's what your Monday meeting is supposed to be for. Your Monday meeting is a marketing meeting about it's a giving board, what did we do? Sean, what did you do? Let's talk about the meeting that you had or the meeting you should have. And I'm going to talk about the meeting I had, the meeting I should have had. And you hold each other accountable to this stuff, and you're going to get more done. And you brainstorm. And you do what we're doing right now.
Right.
All right, so you make these niches, and what you do is you actually make a folder for each niche. You put it right into the scheduler and make it pop up every month. And the reason you do that is that you get it and you put it in your hands and you spend 45 minutes thinking about the niche, making the calls and working it, okay? And if you don't do that, the niche doesn't get attention. Maybe it does, but you don't. It's the same problem you had with clients, inconsistency. So you want to make sure that the niche comes up every month. And even if you worked on it 2 weeks ago, it comes up once a month. And you look at it, you make a call, you make two calls, you move it forward. Okay?
Perfect.
Same thing with your mastermind group. You put it on a schedule. You maybe, you know, 12 times a year. Maybe, you know, everybody can't make it 12 times a year. But you're going to make it 10 times a year. And so you're going to get three or four good referrals from it that are going to end up being one or two, you know, $20 million clients. And that's all it takes, right?
Correct.
So you certainly don't want to abandon your natural niches. These are natural niches. What Richard wants you to do is create some targeted niches, which is what we just talked about. And Richard
exactly.
would agree that that what we just discussed is a targeted niche. The tool and die makers are a targeted niche. That's as targeted as he needs. He would love that.
Okay. All right.
So good. All right. Well, see if you can stay on the schedule. Friday, you know, Thursday. I like the Thursday. A lot of people don't like Friday. People are gone, except the Thursday meeting, which is your five-star meeting where everybody reports. It's your scoreboard. And then Monday is marketing. So see if you can keep those two going and keep them separate. And I think that will help to, you know, focus. And I don't like you guys working on different floors. I think that's not terrible. You need this productivity.
Yeah, I agree.
Go down and visit your friend, make a phone call down there or two, but stay on the ninth floor and work together. And because you need the energy, just like this call. This call is all about creating energy so that you get fired up so you take some action.
I agree with you 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. You separate, you have
no
energy.
I think they underestimated how much they were going to miss me.
Well, of course you miss you. You're the energy bunny. You know, I am too. We bring a lot of energy to a team, and so that's what everybody needs. And otherwise, they die and you die because you need them.
I'm just wondering if the fourth floor is saying, please take them back.
Hear that. Too much. You know, I hear that. All right,
but,
guys.
You know, thanks, Rob. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks. Good luck.
Bye now.
Send me an email when you get one of these, get this mastermind group going. I'd love to hear about it.
I'll do it.
All right, thanks.
Bye now.
Bye.